Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
Yeah, but we won't know which side of the debate we're taking until we flip a coin. Winner of the coin flip gets to pick which side of the debate they want to argue.
And both of us will have to argue in favor of our respective positions, whether we agree with them or not.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate. Hi, everyone. I'm Ed Slott, along with Jeff Levine, and welcome back to the Great Retirement Debate. Now, if you remember last time, we really got into it, whether to convert to a Roth or not. And I would have to say I did lose the coin toss, and I had to take an argument that I might not agree with. But as usual, Jeff, we want to give people both sides of the coin. And I took the side for reasons when it might not be favorable to convert to a Roth. And we got so into it that we had to make two episodes. So this is the beginning of part two. So Jeff, continuing from last week, here are even more reasons or situations where it may be more favorable not to convert to a Roth IRA. It's all about the tax rates. And that's what this Roth conversation is about, to convert or not to convert. It's a big giant bet on where you think, where tax rates are today versus what they might be in the future at distribution time. If you think tax rates will be higher later on, as Jeff just said, then the Roth is a good deal. If you think your own tax rates might be lower, but you have to look beyond too. You might even look towards beneficiaries. I remember one guy telling me years ago, and I told him all about converting, and I talked about the tax rate argument, and he said, well, I don't mind it for me, but to put it nicer than he put it, he says, I got three kids and they're all losers. They'll never be in.
That was nicer than he put it, huh?
What's that?
That was nicer than he put it.
Oh, that was way nicer.
Okay.
He said they will never be in a high bracket. But granted, that was back in the days of the stretch IRA. And he said they're going to always be in low brackets. So that might be a little different now with the 10-year rule. But you have to look beyond the tax rates. You know, if you leave an IRA to beneficiaries, remember, the more tax returns you could spread that income over. And that's just totally about the beneficiaries. Let's, for example, even under the 10-year rule, if you have three kids and they wanted to spread out the distributions on the IRA that you didn't convert, that you left to them, and they wanted to do it over 10 years, they could spread that income over 30 different tax returns, 10 years times for each of the three of them, and get that money out at almost nothing. Now, that's on the back end. That may be a concern for you, too. Another reason, so that may be a reason to hold on, not convert, and let them get that money out at bargain basement rates, especially if they themselves may be in lower brackets. Again, it's all about the brackets, the marginal rates now versus when the money has to come out.
Well, that's really good. Yeah, let me pause you there, Ed, because you know, you're talking about the brackets and the rates and when people get stuff. But, you know, one of the things that makes IRAs different from just about every other type of asset is that you can't get it to someone else until you're dead, right? There's no way to gift an IRA to other heirs during lifetime. And most of the time, married couples will end up leaving their IRA to each other first. And then when the second one passes away, that's when it goes down to the kids. Well, you talk about that and you said spreading the tax bills over lots of different returns, which sounds great, but while you're alive, there's just one return you could spread it over, yours. And if you're married and one of you passes away and the survivor lives for some sort of extended period of time, you go from using the nice joint brackets down to the single brackets, which get you to much higher tax rates at much lower income levels. And so that can end up being a significant impact. Sometimes people refer to it as the widow or widower's penalty. Right. And effectively what happens is someone who's surviving can end up with with slightly less income because you lose the lower Social Security check and you sometimes lose pensions, et cetera. There's that word again, Ed. You can sometimes lose some income, but still end up with a significantly higher tax bill because you're paying a higher rate because now you're filing as a single individual. So converting while both members of a couple are alive is almost like buying tax bracket insurance. You're ensuring that you can use those joint brackets as opposed to the single brackets.
But again, it all comes down to if you think you'll be in a lower rate in retirement. Some people believe they will be. Another reason you may not want to convert at least everything is if you're anticipating, and a lot of people are, large medical bills as you get older. You want to have, if the only money, if that's where most of your money is in a taxable IRA, you're not going to want to convert that because if medical bills go really high, and I have to tell you, the last 10 years, it hasn't been unusual to see tax returns where people claim over $100,000 of medical expenses. I had this, you know, with my own mother recently, nurses' aides, nursing homes, all kinds of medical home improvements, ramps and railings and chairlifts and stairlifts and widening doorways and hallways and bathroom and kitchen modifications. These are big ticket items. If the only money available to pay for that is in an IRA, don't convert it. Use that IRA. If you convert it to a Roth, now you paid tax on money you could have got a deduction for. That would be a reason to keep some of that IRA money. Use it to pay these medical bills. At least you'll get somewhat of an offsetting deduction. I know there's a threshold amount, but I'm talking about big ticket items. You'll get some type of big tax benefit by using regular IRA money. And there's another reason you have to be careful and you should always do a projection. One thing with Roth conversions, you better be careful what you do because they are permanent. There's no backsies. There's no getting your money back. There's no do-overs. That stopped a few years back. We used to call them Roth recharacterizations. So I wouldn't be so quick to convert. I'm not saying that should deter you, but you have to have an accurate tax projection. You have to know what it's going to cost before you buy in because you can't get your money back. So those are some other reasons. I'll throw in one more reason. This may not affect a lot of people, but right now we have this oddball deduction, which does help a lot of self-employed people, the qualified business income deduction. If you convert to a Roth and you have maybe you have a small business that has pass-through income or you're a Schedule C, self-employed, or you have an S-Corp or an LLC or a partnership, we have pass-through income. You may or may not be, always run this by your tax advisors, you may qualify for a huge 20% deduction if you're under certain income limits for certain groups. Without getting into the weeds on this, a Roth conversion can actually kill that and cost in the wrong year, cost you a big tax deduction on your business income. So those are other things, not to mention if maybe you're younger or you're paying for a college and you know, the income from a Roth conversion could throw you out for financial aid. So there are reasons on both sides of this debate.
You know, Ed, you hit on something there that it's not an argument for my side, nor an argument against my side, but just a point that I think that we should really hit on. You talked about the phasing out of this QBI deduction, and that's just one example, this business deduction that Ed was just talking about. You know, that's just one example. There are credits that phase out as income goes up. There are other deductions that phase out as income goes
up. IRMA charges, or what we call
taxes. Yep. Yeah. Surtaxes, right. The 3.8% investment surtax. All the good things, basically, that are on a tax return that go away, where the bad things that come in are somehow keyed to income. And so when we talk about rates, so oftentimes people associate rates with brackets. The brackets help to inform what the rate is, but they don't determine what the rate is. There are times when you might be in a lower bracket, but be paying a higher tax rate because you're phasing yourself out of some sort of credit or deduction you may not get in the future because of circumstances changing. For instance, you know, if you phase yourself out of an education credit, right? Well, you only get that credit maybe while you or your kids are in school. Once they're out of school, you don't have to worry about phasing yourself out of the credit anymore because you don't get it to begin with. So, and whenever you're doing this and talking with your financial professionals, be it their tax advisor or your financial advisor, it's important not to fall into the bracket trap of just looking at what bracket you're in. You have to look at the full picture. Now, Ed, I want to bring up one maybe last argument here for my side, and I think it is my trump card, and that is peace of mind. You know, peace of mind. When we talk about retirement, there are so many unknowns. How long will I live? What will interest rates be? What will markets do? What will my health be like? What will inflation be? All of these are unknown. So is what will my future tax rate be? Unless that money is sitting in a nice, beautiful tax-free account like the Roth IRA. And there, even if I've overpaid a little bit, now I certainly wouldn't suggest people make foolish decisions and dramatically overpay. But if you're not sure, right? There are some times when people will just do things because it gives them peace of mind and security. The same thing goes for people who maybe, you know, like Ed, I know you drive a car. Thankfully, you're in a position where if God forbid something happened, if there was an accident and someone hit your car, you would be able to pay to fix your car. You don't need insurance on your car. You don't need collision insurance, but you own it because it gives you peace of mind. And the same thing comes with the Roth. And by the way, anytime you buy insurance, theoretically, on the whole, it should be a losing proposition. Otherwise, the insurance companies would be out of money.
Damn, my house didn't burn down, and I had all that fire insurance.
That's right, exactly. No one gets upset about that. No one goes and drives to work and says, can't believe I didn't get into an accident today driving to work. What a waste of money. No, sometimes you do things just because it gives you peace of mind, and the Roth conversion can do just that. I rest my case with that argument, good sir.
All right. I think you rested your case to do a Roth conversion by handing me off the biggest softball in this debate on reasons maybe not to convert. You said, well, at least I have insurance. My Roth will be tax-free forever. I never have to worry about it. Well, CPAs have an old saying, tax laws are written in pencil. And the number one question, and you probably know what it is, I get in every program I do for consumers, especially after I talk all about the great things, which I love Roth IRAs because I love tax-free, they say, yeah, but can I trust the government to keep its word that Roth IRAs will always be tax-free? What if they need money? Can they change the laws? I guess anything's possible, but that sits in people's minds. They don't want to be played for suckers paying a tax, and then the Congress can find some way around the fringes, maybe. Personally, I don't think they'll do it because if they kill the golden goose, which is the Roth IRA for them that produces a lot of revenue, but it's what people are thinking about. And if that keeps you up at night, that may be a reason not to convert.
All right. Well said. Well, you know, Ed, this one, perhaps more than any other that we've talked about so far, truly has two very, very compelling sides. There's lots of reasons to convert, lots of reasons not to convert. As you pointed out, Ed, for many people, this is not an all or a nothing decision. Right. It's ultimately, most people who do conversions probably should not do a giant conversion one time. It's usually done over many years in a limited fashion each year so as not to raise the rate too high. Obviously, the more you convert, the more income you're going to have, the higher your income tax rate will be. You know, save for maybe those at the highest tax rates already where it can't get much worse. And we look at someone who might be paying more tax down the road when things expire, going from 37% back up to 39.6%. With the exception of those who are already at that highest tax rate, it's likely that this is a multi-year process to shift money over. And for many folks, it will ultimately be a combination of traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, and taxable accounts like joint accounts, individual accounts, revocable trust accounts that ultimately produces the greatest tax efficiency in terms of
what we call tax risk diversification.
Tax risk diversification, indeed. Now, I will say, Ed, at the risk of arguing against something I just said, I think too many people aim to have that diversification. The goal, as we talked about earlier, is pay your taxes when your rate is the lowest.
Right.
But oftentimes, that results in having tax diversification, which you can then use to your advantage.
Right. That was a good point. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ed, on that note, when you say it's a good point, that's where I want to end. So I'm going to end there and call it a day. You know, Ed,
like that Seinfeld episode where George makes an argument. I'm out of here.
That's it. I'm out. I'm done. The summer of George. All right. I've been watching old Seinfeld episodes lately. I got to that one the other night. All right. Well, on that note, you know, there are two sides to every coin. We covered them today, but your life and your retirement decisions are too important to leave up to that coin flip. And that is why the one thing that Ed and I will always agree on is making sure that you talk through any big decision, like should I convert to a Roth or not, with a knowledgeable financial advisor or tax professional so that you can weigh the pros and cons of these decisions against your specific goals and objectives. If you'd like to continue the discussion with Ed and I, we would love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Do you have your money in a Roth, in a traditional IRA? Are you in the process of converting? Do you believe the government when they say it's going to be tax-free in the future? Let us know. Reach out to us on Twitter using the handle @TheSlotReport. That's @TheSlot with 2 T's report for Ed, or @CPAPlanner. Once again, that's @CPAPlanner for myself. We'd love to hear from you. Ed, this one was a lot of fun. I can't wait for our next debate together.
Oh, yeah. On the great retirement debate, this was a big one. To Roth or not? Listen back a few times. There were a lot of points in this one, so you may want to play it back. And we also talk fast. See you next time on the Great Retirement Debate.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.